Technorama episode 640, Wagon Train to the Stars. Hello and welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, welcome to the show. Woo, 640. No one will ever need more than that.
That's right.
I am Chuck Tomasi. Oh, I forgot to say, if you're rejoining us, welcome back. Thank you very much. I'm Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, and joining me as always, right there across that Zoom interface is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I think we call that the digital divide, right?
Right there, right there. Digital yeah. Divide.
That's it. Yeah. So is it on this side?
No.
I can't remember. This one? I don't know. I'm doing good.
Spring off to a good start?
I think so. You know, we have our user conference at work, and that was, I thought it was going to be a lot more stressful than it actually turned out to be. So I'm in good shape.
I agree. It's eerily quiet. I'm not sure what that means.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot quieter than I thought it was going to be. And so a lot of hand wringing and worrying. And if I was covering my bases beforehand, turns out I did.
So, oh, longtime listener Tim Elliott is on YouTube. He said, "Hi guys, was Server Room of Horrors video? No, that was audio only."
Yeah,
we were all in different locations. I can only imagine what that would have looked like on video.
Server Room of Horrors. I think we posted a couple of those on our blog, because one time we posted on everybody's blog that was in the Fit group. Yeah, but some of the other stuff, it was just on the Fit site, which I still have all that stuff. So I should repost it somewhere.
If we don't want to lose anything that was on the Friends in Tech site.
No. And I think there's multiple copies floating around. As a matter of fact, I think a lot of it's still in Dropbox. I need to go take a look, to be honest with you.
This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com. Yeah.
Oh, man. That brings back a lot of memories. We had a good time with that group. And
yes, we did.
Actually, we caught up with everybody.
About 6 months ago.
Year. Yeah, about 6 months. I was already saying a couple months ago, but no, it's been more like six. I think we're due to do that again.
I think we are, too. Anyway, we're done waxing poetically about the past or pining for podcast days gone by. Let's get into our question of the week from actually 2 weeks ago. We took last week off for Mother's Day.
Letters. Oh, we get letters.
Letters.
We get letters. Your letters every day. Mailman, mail today. Reach right in and pull one out. Those letters. I love those letters. Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh, boy.
Mailman, mail today.
Our question of the week last week was, what's a quote that permanently changed the way you look at things? And we have some comments on the Technorama page. Do you want to pull up your page, Craig? And we'll kind of alternate around.
Yeah, let's take a look.
I've got one from Dhruv. He says, "You have two lives. Second one starts when you realize you have only one." Ooh, that sounds very
ominous.
Zen.
Yeah, it does. Why did I come up with the Technorama? I think I got the same link in there twice.
Oops.
That's okay.
Go to the shares.
Oh, no, I'll put mine up. But okay. Let's say Facebook. Anyway, I'll read one of those. So, Dhruv, is that how you say his
name? I just read that one.
Oh, you did?
You were clicking instead of listening again.
Yeah, huh? What? Anyway, so John Miller Jr. says everybody lies. Dr. Gregory House. And a man is as faithful as his options, from Chris Rock.
Steve London says, as a former tech support runner, sneakers tech support, you ran out to the user help. You had sneakers on. Never mind. You get the pictures. Anyhow, he has a whole bunch of things in here. Pebcac, problem exists between keyboard and chair. That was something that changed his life, or the way he looks at things forever. BDU is a brain dead user. Wow, this is...
I have to say, I used to use, there's a nut loose on the keyboard, which reminds me of the circuit between the keyboard and the seat.
an ID10T error, those kinds of things. He also has, and of course, learn something, help someone, share something. Mm-hmm. That was a derivative of something I used to say on the community live stream all the time. Learn, share, help. All right. We got one more on the Technorama page. I love mankind. Oh. It's people I can't stand. Linus Van Pelt. Nice.
Actually, I'll tell you one that it's kind of hard to live by. It's from not hard to live by. That's not what I meant to say. On Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Slarty Bart Fast, he says, I'd rather be happy than right. I always thought that was good marital advice.
Ow.
Rather be happy than
right. Do you have yours up there?
No, I didn't have anything.
My sister says, don't boo. That's somebody's son. It must be like at school plays or something. Boo!
Right. Oh, I see.
That's the context I'm taking it in. Sean Brockman says, if you don't like where you are, move. You're not a tree. I heard one that was similar to that. It's like, wherever you go, there you are.
That's right.
Yeah. Patty says, life's a journey, not a destination. Ralph said, there ain't no such thing as a free lunch. And then Steve replied, unless someone else is paying for it.
Right.
I don't think there's always a hook for that. A good friend, Brian Parker from DragonCon says, excuses or performance? You don't get both. Ooh, I'm going to like that one. Jack Mangan says, you have the right to remain silent. Anything you say or do. Oh, that's something that changed his view on things forever.
Yeah.
Emily says, perception is reality. Yeah, that's quite true. What other people perceive is their reality. And Mark Trouble says, joy is in the ear that hears, not the mouth that tells. Ooh, very nice. Another Zen-like thing. Wow, we're getting philosophical.
The one about perception is reality, it reminds me of in The Big Lebowski, where he says, that's like your opinion, man.
I remember hearing that at my old job. What was it? Probably 2006, seven, maybe in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. My boss, who's now the COO of the company, is...
your old boss.
Yeah, one of my old bosses. I had like six bosses inside of 18 months. It was like a ping pong game or a pinball game. And part of that was I did change roles once. The other one he said was, if you're not moving forward, then you're standing still. And if you're standing still, then you're really moving backwards because everyone else is moving forwards.
True.
So keep moving forwards, people. All right. That is our philosophical. Well, we got a few of them out there today. Yeah. I never put away our subtitle. Let's do that. Come on. You didn't ding at me there. I'll just click it manually. Maybe it'll work next time. All right, history time. Should we do the history?
Yes.
Play that history music. On this day in history for May 19th, 2021, this is the 139th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar, and there are 226 days remaining in the year. It was on this date in 1743 that Jean-Pierre Christine developed the centigrade temperature scale. 1743, and the U.S. still hasn't caught on.
No kidding. Also on May 19th, 1961, Venera 1 became the first man-made object to fly by another planet by passing Venus. The probe had lost contact with Earth a month earlier and did not send any data back.
Oh, well, it was on target to pass by Venus, so this is more of an assumption than a fact.
Right. Well, we'll round out. We'll round up.
59 years ago today, the birthday salute to U.S. President John F. Kennedy took place at Madison Square Garden, New York City. The highlight, of course, was Marilyn Monroe's rendition of Happy Birthday. Happy birthday, Mr. President.
Why don't you do that one on karaoke night?
I don't think so. I don't fit in the dress anymore.
Oh, okay. Well, good. May 19th, 1971, Mars 2 was launched by the Soviet Union. Hey, wait a minute. You don't fit in the dress anymore because of COVID weight?
I love the lag on that.
I was thinking it while I was reading this.
I was literally going TikTok, TikTok in my head.
COVID weight.
Yeah, blame it on the internet. On May 19th, 1996, Space Shuttle Endeavour was launched on mission STS-77.
And also today in 2000, Space Shuttle Atlantis was launched on a mission STS-101 to resupply the International Space Station.
I believe it's pronounced 101.
101. 101. I don't know why I said 101.
You miss every opportunity, man. It was on this date in 2018 that the wedding of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle was held in St. George's Chapel, Windsor, and an estimated audience of 1.9 billion worldwide. I watched part of it from an airplane on the approach to London Heathrow.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh, so you were going
for the landing as the people were lined up along the street.
You were there just in time for the reception.
Well, we were watching the ceremony while we were in the passport check-in line, and so were all the passport check-in people watching the wedding on the monitors. Like, hey, hey, we got to get into your country.
Yeah, freak it up.
Never mind that thing that's going on that's monumental. Anyway, birthdays today include American businessman and philanthropist Johns Hopkins. You know Johns Hopkins University? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that Johns Hopkins. Born today in 1795.
And John Jacob
Abel.
He's in our demo data.
No, that's Abel Tudor.
Yes, I know Abel Tudor. American, I know he's been in a lot of trouble. He's got a lot of incidents and stuff. He's filed.
Move on.
American biochemist and pharmacologist was born on the same date in 1857.
If he was Dutch, would it be Jan Jacob Abel?
I think you got something caught in your throat.
No, that's if you're speaking. That's if you're speaking German. Born May 19, 1903, American scientist Ruth Ella Moore.
And American minister and activist Malcolm X was born on this date in 1925.
Or is it Malcolm the 10th? I can never remember that.
Malcolm the 10th.
Sorry. English engineer and businessman founded Lotus Cars. Carl Chapman was born 93 years ago today.
It's Colin Chapman.
What did I say?
Carl.
That was his brother. Sorry.
It's probably because you saw the word cars before.
He started Lotus Notes.
Yeah, right. So Dick Scobee, the American colonel pilot and astronaut, was born on the same date 82 years ago today.
He was 82. He was one of the Challenger astronauts in 86 that had that terrible demise.
Yeah, that's right.
And I did a little math. He was 48 when that thing kaboomed. Wow. Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Or 47. Amazing. I wasn't sure. American computer scientist founded Digital Research, Inc., Gary Kildall, born on this date in 1942.
And Jamaican American singer songwriter, producer, and actress Grace Jones is 73 today.
Actress.
But we don't see her at all anymore.
Yeah. We'll blame it on that James Bond film.
Yeah.
American singer, songwriter, and bass player for ZZ Top, Dusty Hill, was born today in 1949.
And Joey Ramone, American singer, songwriter, was born on the same date in 1951.
I want to be sedated. Canadian-American computer scientist, the guy who created Java, James Gosling, is a mere 66 years old today.
Hmm.
Listener birthdays today include JPCJ on the 14th. Well, we had to go back a week because we missed a week. Tim Elliott on the 22nd. Hey, there he is in the YouTube chat. Happy birthday, Tim.
He's alive.
He just tuned in tonight just to hear his birthday, and now he's going to take off.
He's going to click off and go away.
Chris Zeal, host of the producer of the AVS cast on and 24 Under Review, is on the 23rd. And on the 26th, longtime listener Eli Yukelzon. I'm not sure I pronounced that right, but apologies if it's wrong. Happy birthday to all of you. Good. That's the way it was on this day for May 19th, 2021. Don't forget, if you want to get your birthday on the birthday calendar, we got a link for that. Heck yeah, right there. ChuckChat.com/wiki. Right in time with the music. That is so cool. I love it when that works out. Love it when a plan comes together.
That's right.
And would you like to take us into the first story?
Good news, everyone!
Didn't need the reverb on that one.
No kidding. So a man who is paralyzed communicates by imagining handwriting. And this is a pretty cool story. At least I think so. So the experimental device that turns thoughts into text has allowed a man who was left paralyzed by an accident to construct sentences swiftly on a computer screen. So the man was able to type with 95% accuracy just by imagining he was handwriting letters on a sheet of paper, a team reported Wednesday in the journal Nature. What we found surprisingly is that he can type at 90 characters per minute, says Krishna Shenoy.
It's faster than most people.
Yeah, I would think so, of Stanford University. The device would be most useful to someone who could neither move nor speak, says Dr. Jamie Henderson, the neurosurgeon at Stanford and co-director with Shenoy, of Stanford Neural Prosthetics Translation Laboratory. Says we can click away from this little pop-up. We can also envision it being used by someone who might have had a spinal cord injury who wants to use email. Say a computer programmer who wants to go back to work. That'd be interesting.
Cord injury.
Sorry. Getting my screen back up here.
Was that?
Oh, sorry. I had a couple of audio artifacts because I was putting my screen back up here.
That's okay.
I lost my Facebook tab and then I had to bring it back and it wasn't muted.
I was like, why am I hearing myself? So both Henderson and Shenoy have a proprietary interest in commercializing the experimental approach used to decode brain signals. So the idea of decoding the brain activity involved in handwriting is just brilliant, says John Nagai, who directs the National Institute of Health's Brain Initiative. But it was only on one subject in a laboratory setting. So at the moment, it's a great demonstration of a proof of principle.
Hmm.
So yeah, he would just sit there and imagine how you would write a J, H, J, K, you know, whatever, and spell out the words in his head and it would read it.
There's no paper, no pencil too. Couldn't resist.
But I think it's a really cool thing, but it's also a little scary if they can read your thoughts to enough to, you know, imagine you were trying to.
What happens when your mind starts to wander? Is it writing that down too?
Yeah.
She took off her clothes and whoa.
But you know, you could, I was thinking about that. So say you were done typing, maybe you could imagine a string that would tell the computer to stop, almost like asking Google or Alexa to
cancel. When they start talking back to you, to cancel. Did you know that you could set up, stop, cancel?
That's right.
All right. Next story.
I think it's cool. That's a great technology though.
Yes.
You know what else I thought of is people that, yeah, like you mentioned the spinal cord injuries, but people that were, they thought they were in a coma or something, they can't move, but they're awake in their mind. You know, maybe they can get something like that.
Oh, hey, we've got a nice report on UFOs due out next month.
Yay.
Okay, we've tackled many strange stories here on Technorama. It says 60 minutes because this is from CBSNews.com. But perhaps none like this. It's the story of the U.S. government's grudging acknowledgement of unidentified aerial phenomenon, or UAP, more commonly known as UFOs. After decades of public denial, the Pentagon now admits there's something out there. The truth is out there. And the U.S. Senate wants to know what it is. The Intelligence Committee has ordered the Director of National Intelligence and the Secretary of Defense to deliver a report on the mysterious sightings by next month. This is from Bill Whitaker. So what you're telling us is that UFOs, unidentified flying objects, are real? Lou Elizondo says, Bill, I think we're beyond that already. The government has already stated for the record that they're real. I'm not telling you that. The United States government is telling you that. Luis Elizondo spent 20 years running military intelligence operations worldwide in Afghanistan, the Middle East, and Guantanamo. He hadn't given UFOs a second thought until 2008. That's when he was abducted. Oh, I'm sorry. That's when he was asked to join something at the Pentagon called the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, or AATIP, which is closely related to AARP.
ATIP.
The mission of ATIP was quite simple, says Liu. It was to collect and analyze information involving anomalous aerial vehicles, which I guess in the vernacular you call them UFOs. We call them UAPs. Well, you know how this sounds? It sounds a bit nutty, wacky, says Bill. And then Lou responds, Bill, look, Bill, I'm not telling you that it doesn't sound wacky. What I'm telling you is it's real. The question is, what is it? What are its intentions? What are its capabilities? Well, apparently they've been flying around the U.S. restricted airspace. So there is an interview going on here. You know, unidentified object or UTP.
UAPs. UAPs.
It's easier to say UFO. It just means you can't identify it. It doesn't mean it's an alien craft.
Right. Well, the thing is, a UFO would be real, but what is it? That's the thing. So, you know, it could be anything. So, yes, they're real, but what are they? We don't know.
I want to believe.
I want to also. Anyway.
It's probably one of the best things that could happen right now is, you know, the aliens come. So at least we're all unified as a
great,
as a global.
Who had aliens in May?
We would certainly come together as a world, wouldn't we?
I don't know if we can't come together about masks. I don't know if we're going to come together about aliens.
That's true.
Yeah.
They'll abduct us. Great. I want to go with them. No, I don't want to go with them. Half the people do. Half the people don't. Should we wear a mask with the aliens? Because we don't want to infect them. Yeah. No, didn't you read War of the Worlds, people?
That's right. Yeah. So anyway, moving right along.
Hey, we just had an anniversary about this in 1961 when when the satellite flew by Venus. So why don't you give us a story on that update?
Yeah, so here we go. Venus, another Venus flyby reveals low frequency radio signal detected in the planet's atmosphere. Yeah, so during a close flyby of the planet Venus in July of 2020, NASA's Parker Solar Probe detected something odd as it dipped just 833 kilometers, which is 517 miles, above the Venusian surface. The probe's instruments recorded a low-frequency radio signal, a telltale sign that Parker had skimmed through through the ionosphere, a layer of the planet's upper atmosphere. This was the first time the instrument had been able to record direct in situ measurements of Venus after Venus's upper atmosphere in nearly 30 years. I started to say 30 years.
Don't hurt yourself.
Yeah. And the data recorder gives us a new understanding of how Venus changes in response to the cyclic changes in the sun. It was just so excited to have new data from Venus, said Glenn Collison of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. Venus is a fascinating world to us here on Earth. It's so similar to our own planet in size and composition, but so crucially different. A toxic, scorching, hot hell world that is likely completely inhospitable to life as we know it.
No, long live the extremophiles.
Yeah. So how the two planets could have developed in such radically different beasts as a depth of interest in planetary scientists and astrobiologists searching for other inhabitable worlds out there in the Milky Way.
All right. Now, we have a recording of what this sounds like.
I'm Crazy Harry, and every car has to go.
That's right. Come and get them.
Low prices. Actually, all you got to do is get your car from Venus.
Actually, there is a YouTube video on here with the audio on there, and you can hear it.
Really? Let's try that out.
It's only, yeah.
This sounds like what I go to sleep to every night.
I think it sounds like the Enterprise D.
Yes, that's what I go to sleep to every night.
Are you serious?
Yes. I put that... There's whales! No, it's a Thomas Dolby concert!
Thomas Dolby... Somebody's playing the theremin.
They're showing as it's going through the ionosphere. That was pretty cool. There's a little map that showed how the sound changed as they just glanced the ionosphere. That was cool. Okay. Now that your eardrums are thoroughly rubbed raw. Nice story. Thanks. That takes care of the news. I think let's just go into the Hacks and Strange Stories then. Don't push that button. Okay. Bunny the dog can talk and starts asking existential questions. This from of our wonderful news sources called Salon.com. When Bunny, TikTok's beloved sheepadoodle, stared at herself in a mirror and asked,
"Who's this?"
using her augmentative and alternative communications or AAC device buttons. Hey, isn't that the encoding method Apple uses for their music?
That's right.
Many believe she was having an existential crisis. Since then, the internet famous dog has seemingly only become more interested in her own, dare we say, sense of self. Most recently, on April 24th, Alexis Divine, Bunny's human parent, posted a video of Bunny pressing a button for dog, and then a second button for what? A third button for dog, and a fourth for is, spelling dog, what dog is. That sounds like an 80s song. Or is it a band?
What me is.
Yeah. That's a band from the 80s. Dog, what dog is. I love your music.
People are people.
Quote, this is happening so frequently that I'm going to add the buttons animal, same, and different. Divine wrote in the caption, which accompanied the Instagram post. The canine bunny, who has 6.5 million followers on TikTok, is one of nearly 2,600 dogs and 300 cats enrolled in a project called They Can Talk. The study's aim is to understand if animals can communicate with humans through AAC systems. AAC systems such as Bunny's giant labeled buttons that speak a single word when pressed were originally designed to help humans with communication disorders, yet they've been adapted to be used in language experiments with animals, such as the study Bunny is enrolled in, and which is led by Federico Rossano, director of the Comparative Cognition Lab at the University of California, San Diego. In Rossano's study, participants receive instructions on how to set up their AAC buttons for pets. Generally, pets begin with easy words like outside and play. Pet parents set up cameras and constantly monitor the animals when they're in front of their boards, data which is sent to the lab so that researchers examine what they say. Now, Bunny's followers have become obsessed with the notion that her language learning is making her develop some kind of self-awareness. Take a drink. That's a Star Trek reference. Some kind of.
Yeah, some kind
of. Is that possible? And if so, does learning language have something to do with it? So, I would be putting goofy voices on these buttons.
You have all the voices from Futurama on there?
Oh, I was thinking of more like Up. I do not like the kind of sound.
It is kind of fascinating to see the dog hit the button. We talked about another story where they were teaching the dog how to speak. Remember when they had a video and the dog was hitting the buttons?
Yes.
To go outside and stuff. So I don't know how real this is, but the dog was adding words together to make a sentence or a question in this view. So it's kind of neat.
Get me a scotch.
You know what? You know what? I was just thinking we should circle back around to that earlier article and just have the dog imagine spelling the words out. Maybe it'll get a
90%. Imagining, yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to go for a smoke.
Boone. Smoke. You know, and then you see the dog outside on the patio.
Right. Yeah. That would get some TikTok viewers. I'll tell you what. I'm all about that.
What do you think? I think it's kind of, it's interesting. It's thought provoking.
It is.
For sure.
It is. It's fascinating to see. I don't know. I question how much of this is
conditioning, maybe.
Well, yeah. I mean, is the dog learning new pathways to get a behavior? I'm not a linguistics expert or a brain science person or anything, but how is this different than how we put together words when we're learning a language to get an achieved result? You know, when you're dealing with a little kid, they're going uppy, uppy, uppy. And they know if they say that series of words that they're likely to get picked up, which is what they want. Well, mm-hmm. That's in English, but if you take the same kid in France, they're saying something different. So.
Well, I remember I did some reading a while back to see, I was curious what the average intelligence of a dog is. And most of what I read, it was around, they can learn about 250 words. A smart, really smart dog can get about 250 words.
What would happen if you changed the language? I mean, would they still hit the same button? Are they going to hit, if you changed, you know, from English to Spanish, but you left all the labels and the buttons were in the same place?
Well, you know what? They may think they hit the wrong button or something because it didn't sound right. Because my dog knows some words. I walk my dog without.
Do you talk to your dog in Spanish? Pero qué, pero es.
Yes, I do.
What dog? Yeah. What is?
Yo quiero be cerveza. Yeah. No, but I
and he
walk
gives
my
you one
dog,
of those head cocked looks like, huh?
Well, she listens to voice commands, and I say sidewalk, which is really the gutter. It's not really a sidewalk, so. The gutter of the road, and she knows to walk in that. She gets in the road. I
you
say
make
sidewalk.
Your dog walk in the gutter? You big meanie.
Well, there's no sidewalks where we're going, but I make her walk in the gutter so she's not in the middle of the road when cars come. And she knows to wait. I tell her to step up when a car's coming, and she'll get in the grass and stop. You know, she knows those things. She knows his words. Now, can she use them back? I don't know, but probably not.
Get on the sidewalk. How? Well, you hop up the curb. All right. This you clearly have to read this next one because, well.
Oops, I just closed it.
14-year-old humor coming out here. We couldn't do without some fart jokes.
Yeah, brace yourself.
So yeah, get ready or fast forward. It's up to you.
Okay. Here's why farting in space isn't as fun as it sounds.
I'll bet you can't do this with a straight face.
Oh, you want to bet?
Go for it.
Passing wind, letting one rip, tooting and farting, whatever you call it, is something we humans do more times than we care to admit. When looking at science farting, I'm sorry.
You're done.
I'm sorry.
I want to read this as a newscaster. I want to read this as a newcaster. When we look at the science of farting, it's amazing how many different gases our bodies can produce and emit through the day. From carbon dioxide to nitrogen, as well as hydrogen and methane, we've got it all. Thankfully, Earth is able to absorb all these gases. And that's a good thing, considering the fact that the average adult farts anywhere between 5 to 15 times a day. Of course, if you're a decent human being, you will do it when no one's around. And hopefully, the pungent stench will dissipate before someone enters your fart zone. Astronauts work in small pressurized spaces like the cabin of a space shuttle or space station. If you introduce flammable gases like hydrogen and methane, from your farts, for example, into the mix, then something catches fire on board. Well, goodbye. Surprisingly, that isn't the biggest problem associated with farting in space. Though you're definitely more likely to worsen a small fire when you fart, it won't always injure or kill you. The worst part about farting in space is the lack of airflow. Right. Let's take a step back and remember how farting on Earth works. It's simple. You let one rip. You hope and pray that no one enters the immediate vicinity, and eventually the smell dissipates with the airflow around. With very little airflow in a small, compact space shuttle cabin, that funky smell lingers like an irritating housemate that doesn't pay rent. Quote, farts can kind of hang out. There's not much airflow as on Earth. You got to introduce airflow to get rid of contaminants and carbon dioxide, astronaut Mika Masumoto told Gizmodo. Masumoto then goes on to explain that when you predict a fart coming, just head to the bathroom and let go over there. Supposedly, there's more ventilation that can help disperse the stench. Besides, you don't want to be an arsehole in space.
By the way, I have to say something regarding this article. How many times have you let one rip and hope and pray that nobody enters the immediate vicinity? And usually somebody comes right behind, hey, I need to ask you a question. And I'm like, you know, it never fails.
Hey, that's their fault for entering your personal space.
Or, you know, I'm at, like in my old job, you know, look around and go, it's safe. And the next thing you know, like 2 seconds later, somebody comes over and says, oh, man.
But when you're married, the point is to get as close to your spouse as possible.
Is it now? Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, the old Dutch oven covered wagon game.
Oh, boy. Okay.
We made it through that one fairly intact. All right. Yeah. That takes care of that. Let's do the shout out to the chat room. We've got, as I mentioned, Tim Elliott on YouTube. I see some comments. Well, John Miller Jr. is hanging out. We got a couple other people on Facebook who are remaining silent. So hello to you and thank you for joining us. You can be part of this crowd every Sunday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. We look forward to seeing you on YouTube or Facebook as we live stream this. If there is a reason why we're not around, for example, last week it was Mother's Day, so we kind of had to take one off for that. Or we're traveling or something of that nature, we will let you know ahead of time. So thank you very much to everybody who's hung out there. Should we do a remember when?
Yeah.
It's one of these green buttons around here. There it is. Okay. How far back in time can we see with our naked eye? Please tell us, Craig.
All right. So I'm going to skip through some. There's a lot of pictures in this one. That's why I was attracted to this article. So whenever you observe an object, you aren't viewing it in its present state.
That is correct. Even here on Earth.
That's right. So instead, we're held back while light travels through space. Visible artificial satellites appear as they were 1 to 2 milliseconds ago. The furthest naked eye in the solar system, Uranus, is 2 hours and 40 minutes in the past. Wow. And that's not that... relatively speaking.
No, because if the sun burned out like right now, we wouldn't know it for about 8 minutes because the light is still coming at us.
That's right. So the closest stars in Alpha Centauri system are 4.3 light years away. Mm-hmm. And there it's early 2016 on Earth.
Oh, goodness. They're just getting started with the whole Trump era. I'm not moving there.
Yeah. So the second bright star,
Canopus.
Yeah, Canopus. Sees a pre-industrial revolution Earth, 310 light years distant. Deneb, anchoring the summer triangle, appears as it did 2,615 years ago today. An Athenian democracy is a century away. So, and of course we keep going back. You know what this reminds me of?
Mm.
Remember the movie Contact?
Yes.
In the very beginning of it, I remember being in the theater. It was all dark, and they start going backwards away from Earth, mm-hmm. and you hear all their old radio stations, radio programs, and TV, and all that stuff until it gets fainter and fainter and fainter as you get in the distance. They kind of give you that visual, as not just a visual, just with radio waves about how far away all our radio is. You know, being pushed out from Earth. It's kind of cool.
Yep. So they're just watching I Love Lucy somewhere out there in space.
That's right. Did you go see it in the theater?
No, I watched it 2017, just prior to us going up to Wyoming, when we talked to the scientist who kind of inspired that whole story. Remember, for the eclipse, and we went up there and she was at the high school. Yeah, we got that. That's one of our interviews we had. All right. Thank you to our patrons. This is the good part of the show where we thank our patrons, although we lost a patron this week. Oh, so unfortunate. I saw the count was down by one.
So there's an empty slot if anybody wants to come in.
Yes. This is like an exclusive club. No, it's not an exclusive club. Everyone's welcome. But thank you, Alexis Duran, Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen, Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown. Thank you, Chris MC, Dandy Man Coyer. Thank you, Dean Jensen. Some of these people have been donating for years. Thank you. You really do help keep the costs of this the podcast going. Denise, thank you. Gary and Harold and John, thank you. The other John and Yorga and Christine, thank you. Kyle and Leon and Mark and Mike Wills, thank you. Chris Martinez, thank you. Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Weshy, Steve Therian, Steve Cody, and Steve London. Thank you. Bandwidth, hosting, domain registration, software upgrades. It's all covered by you generous people. And as a result, not only do you get a thank you by us with heartfelt thanks, you get a special episode of the show for some behind the scenes stuff where we just kind of hang out and get a talking dog to make the rest of the podcast.
No. Yeah, that's when I bring my dog in and let her talk.
A little better than that. Dog, what dog is. You can become a patron if you think this show is somewhat mildly entertaining or valuable or worth your time, or you've been listening for 10 years or 15 years or more, because we haven't been doing this for 15 years or more, and you're feeling really guilty that we're out here doing this and you're not part of it. Right. No, we don't want to guilt you into that. Patreon.com. Let's get that up there. I've had the birthday link up there since then. Patreon.com/Technorama podcast is where you can head for as little as a dollar a show. And if we don't produce it, you don't pay for it. We just covered this on Podcasting for Dummies. We did 3 episodes live streamed yesterday that will be coming out for the next few weeks. So it was in the episode 19, Show Me the Money, which will be coming out in a few weeks. So wait for that one if you're into podcasting, that kind of thing. All right, let's wind down the music. Let's put the title away. Hey, I said wind down the music. Where is it? Stop. Abort. Abort. Burp, burp, burp. And jump into Pass Me the Remote. Oh, man, I had like 4 of them this week, and I was being kind and...
4?
Only did
well,
one.
You can mention them.
No, I'm spreading them out for the next few weeks.
Oh, okay.
So don't use up all the fuel on one show, Craig.
Oh, no. I'll watch some more stuff.
Okay, what have you got on your list?
Okay, so the first one is one I had not seen at all, which I don't know.
Samuel L. Jackson documentary.
Yeah, documentary is Snakes on a Plane. It was on HBO Max, and I was like, you know, I have not seen that. I never saw it in the theater.
Bad as they say.
It was more of a
comedy,
you know, as a disaster movie kind of thing. And you know,
that's what I heard. It was a disaster of a movie.
No, it wasn't. I would not say it was high art, but it was, you know, kind of funny the way the snakes were biting people. And of course, you know, a guy's going to the bathroom, and of course, one snake goes right for the other, so to speak.
Was it in the toilet already?
Yes, they were in the toilet. They were coming out of the
control panel. Have you ever looked at a toilet on an airplane? It's got that like airtight seal on the bottom. If there was a snake in there, you would see it before you even got
in. You could just hit the button and it sucked it back down.
Exactly. Well,
anyway, it's just, like I said, it's a disaster movie in the sense that, you know, it's just...
That's one I could leave on the proverbial... Blockbuster. Have you seen it? Shelf. No.
I think you should do your favorite and watch
I refuse to watch that one.
If anything, for to hear Samuel Jackson finally get frustrated with his snakes and make his proclamation that he is tired of those snakes.
I've heard that proclamation 1,000 times. You could you could even have him record the like a voicemail message.
Yeah.
An answering machine message. They had a web service.
There was some
free little clip. Hey, Chuck and Craig, I hear you want to get on a plane. You know, something like that. I forgot what it was. You could do the R-rated one, or you could do the PG-rated one. You could decide whether you wanted to throw in the F-bomb.
Well, I love Samuel Jackson, so I thought I got to watch it. So I did. And it was all right. I wouldn't say it's, again, not high art. It was entertaining enough because it was kind of the goofy with the snakes, you know. But anyway. Now, the next one I saw was actually, I finished up, there's two seasons of it. It's Love, Death, and Robots. There's two seasons on Netflix right now. The first one has 18 episodes. The next one has 6. And I think it's 6. I don't think it's 8. I think it's 6. Anyway, so I'd missed finishing a couple episodes on the first season. So I watched those and went right into the second. It's a great, as a matter of fact, the guys that put this together were looking to reboot or redo or do another heavy metal movie, you know, animated shorts that kind of slightly tie into each other. And that's where this comes from. So all these, there's a little anthology stories. Each episode is different and they all were done by different artistic teams and directors. So the styles are vastly different from each. Well, I say vastly, but they're all different styles, which is really great. So I super enjoyed it, especially this last season. Had some really cool stories. They're very short, you know, about 14. I think the longest one I saw was 17 minutes long. But I love the, not just the storytelling, which is good for the shorts, but the artistic view. Because, like I said, the animation was fantastic on each one. Yeah. And even the last one had Michael B. Jordan. I was trying to figure out if it was his, it looked like it was his real face, but I was trying to figure out if it was animated, like in a computer animation. But anyway.
And where would one find Love, Death, and Robots?
It's on Netflix.
Okay. And give these two a rating, 0 to 10.
Well, Snakes on a Plane, I'll give it probably a 6. Like I said, it wasn't high art. It was fun.
Yes.
And Love, Death, and Robots is more like a 9.
A 9. And you're giving that a heavy weighting on the artistic rather, or is it the story?
Very much so. Well, no, the storytelling was great to fit in those small, less than 17 minute episodes. You know, so they were great. You know, they were all great.
All right. My show is called 1969, which is on Hulu. It's a documentary that is broken into 5 parts. The one focuses on, obviously, the Apollo 11 moon mission.
And then my birth.
One is, no, you were not even in the running.
And not the third episode, maybe?
No, you got left on the cutting room floor, so to speak. There was one on Woodstock. Mm-hmm. One on obviously Vietnam and the vets that were coming home and the conflict that was happening there. A whole bunch of stuff. It was really interesting. There was one called
political.
It was more about the along with Woodstock, they also had, what was the name of the bar, club? There was a club in, I think it was New York. It was a gay bar. And back then, you could be arrested and thrown in jail for being gay. And this is really where the whole pride movement started coming out. And so it was really, you know, eye-opening to see the genesis of a lot of these things and hear from some of the people that were there and some of the people that were influenced by those people. So really well done. I enjoyed this. I watched all 5 parts in about 2 nights. So it's on Hulu. It's called 1969. And I thought they did a magnificent job. So, as I said, I've got more shows, but I'm going to spread them out over the next few weeks because I'm still chugging my way through Stargate Atlantis and Star Trek Voyager. But alongside those, I have some other things that I want to.
Are there other years or just night?
Just that one that I've seen. Just that one that I've seen.
Okay.
Oh, they Chappaquiddick, the whole Ted Kennedy
That's what I was talking about. Political.
And, but they really went into, they covered Mary Jo Kopechne a lot better than any other thing I've ever seen. You know, she was the victim, but she was also kind of a footnote in this whole story. But they talked to her friends, her family, to get what kind of person she was, how she got in that political position that she was in. It was very fascinating, and I liked hearing more about those type of stories. All right, we've got one more for the media. We should have just made that the media corner, but let's go into the media corner. I believe it's that one. There it is.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
And what have you got for us, Craig?
So I found this, and I thought, actually, I could have put this in the Remember When. This is a show, I assume, some BBC show, called The Secret Life of Machines.
I watched every episode. I had this on VHS. I was going to keep this. Before we even had kids, I recorded these going, this would be great educational stuff for my kids as they grow up.
Well, you can send it to them now.
No, I don't have them anymore. I cleaned out the VHS collection before we moved.
Here's the playlist. You can. Just
oh
send
yes,
that
yes. These are great. I love the little cartoonish animations that go along with this. Like when you ring a telephone and you've got this lady going, oh hello.
Yeah, right. I watched the vacuum cleaner one, which was kind of interesting. It shows some of the old vacuum cleaners that people were supposed to use. I'm like, how is that even effective?
Some of them look more like the push lawnmowers. Yeah.
You're supposed to hold one part of it and pump it with the other. And
it's like a solder sucker gun.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah, exactly. So there's one about the vacuum cleaner.
Washing machines, televisions, sewing machines. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff. And they usually make some artwork at the end with like old refrigerators or his friend Rex pops in every once in a while. And there was one where they were working on a tape recorder and he took some rust, like some iron oxide, and just made a fine powder out of it and put it onto some scotch tape, which they referred to as sticky tape. Oh, right. And he made a recording onto that. And you can hear him saying, this recording is made with sticky tape and rust.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Which is how you make tapes. So.
Yes.
So anyway, these are remastered. They upscaled them a little bit, so they're in more HD. So
I am going to watch these again, just from the sentimental value of.
Yeah.
Man, how many 33, 34 years ago? Yeah, and we were watching these after we were married, so it's at least 30 years ago.
Oh, yeah, I was just, I just saw the...
God, Craig, we're getting old!
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I don't need you to tell me that. Anyway, it's a lot of fun to watch, and like I said, they're older, so the aesthetic is 1980-ish. So,
but it gives you the basic principles of how a refrigerator worked. That really hasn't changed a whole lot. Yeah, we've added ice makers and made them a little more energy efficient. Sewing machines still work the same.
Hey, wait.
Now the televisions were cathode ray.
Other than the look of the vacuums, they're still the same.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, unless you got a Roomba.
it still operates the same way.
Kind of.
Well, mine does. It pulls in dust, and it has the fan, the engine behind it to pull it all through the filter, HEPA filter.
What does your Roomba do when it runs into like a pile of cat puke?
Well, I did have to clean it off one time. I did have to do that. It was not fun.
All righty. So yeah, go watch The Secret Life of Machines. And that brings us to our question of the week. Nothing in the geek library this week, but question of the week. What fictional character should have been hit with a huge lawsuit at the end of the story? How about all of the superheroes? Isn't that where what was it called? The something accords from.
They were dealing with that in the Marvel universe, yes. Because everybody was, they weren't necessarily taking responsibility for the collateral damage and everything. So,
right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I can't remember at the moment what that name of that country was.
Sokovia. The Scurvy Accords.
The Scurvy Accords. Yes, that was it.
Yeah. Scurvy.
The Honda Accords. Yes, that's what it was. The Honda Accords.
Imagine, I started to say Gandalf, but I don't know if he would, he needs that lawsuit.
Well, definitely Sauron, but he was destroyed. A lot of the bad guys are destroyed at the end of the movie, so they really don't have much to cover for.
Right.
Was Saruman destroyed? No, he was just kind of left out on his own, so he could be taken to court.
Yeah. Yeah, he could.
Why not? Right. So that's our question of the week. We will post that to social media, and we thank you for all your responses in advance to that. If you want to get a hold of us, let's play that outro music because we're going to get out of here. Look at that, right about on time, too. If you want to get a hold of us, you can reach us at 707-530-2428. 707-530-CHAT is how that goes. Email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. Maybe we can guilt you into calling like we have in some of the other people.
Actually, don't forget, I challenge you to call us.
May, June, July, August, September. Pretty much every month is now International Technorama Hotline Month. We tried that last November.
12 months long.
That'll work.
Right.
Yeah. Find everything you need over at chuckchat.com/technorama, and you'll get a hold of us one way or the other. Thank you very much. Don't forget, tell a friend about Technorama. Subscribe to the podcast. Like it on Facebook and all that other good stuff. Till then, Craig, give us a binary high five.
All right. 101. Thanks.